In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is the I Spy Radio Show.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
Keeping an eye on big government.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
And now, here is your host, Mark Anderson.
As originally used, the Old English word holigdag, or now holiday, literally means holy day, a day set apart as a holy day in the calendar, a day of reverence. It wasn't until several hundred years later that it also took on the meaning of a day when commoners were exempt from labor. But I mention this because holidays in today's society have lost much of their meaning. And with the secularization of America, that's on purpose. After the British surrendered at Saratoga and George Washington and the Continental Congress proclaimed December 18, 1777 as the first national Thanksgiving, it had real meaning. It wasn't a day off. They were setting aside a holy day, a day of reverence and thanks. That meant something. America needs to remember who it is. Americans need to remember who we are. We are a nation set aside. We too have been set apart from other nations. And that carries a special duty to be a light to the world. We were forged in fire by trials and pain and shedding of blood. We were founded not only by throwing off despotism, we were founded to fight off despotism. And yet, here we are again, fighting tyranny. This time because we have allowed it to happen. While we're off just celebrating holidays, we have missed the reverence and holiness behind those days and the holiness behind the founding of our nation. We took too much for granted, and now tyranny is back in the halls of our own government. Shockingly, just days ago, Homeland Security issued a summary of terrorism threat. It reads, in part, "The United States remains in a heightened threat environment fueled by several factors, including an online environment filled with false or misleading narratives and conspiracy theories." One of the reasons? The proliferation of false or misleading narratives which sow discord or undermine public trust in U.S. government institutions. U.S. government institutions excel at undermining public trust in U.S. government institutions. They don't need our help. But doesn't this sound eerily like they are in the beginning stages of setting up a Ministry of Truth right out of George Orwell's novel 1984? All news and information must be sanctioned first. You can just hear it coming. Somewhere, George Orwell is shouting, "It was fiction, people, not a how-to manual." You know, we have said in the past that stories connect us, that our brains are hardwired for stories. But there's something else that connects us. Mathematician Blaise Pascal once said that inside all of us, there is a God-shaped vacuum, which can only be filled with the presence of God in our lives. And until that is filled, we remain truly empty. And right now, America itself has a God-shaped vacuum. Scott Powell has been a fellow at Stanford's Hoover Institution and is currently senior fellow at Discovery Institute. He is a frequent guest on national radio and TV, has published over 250 articles in leading publications, including the Wall Street Journal, New York Post, Washington Times, and others. But he joins us today because he is the author of the brand new book, Rediscovering America, How the National Holidays Tell an Amazing Story About Who We Are. Scott, thanks for joining us. I'm really looking forward to this.
Oh, I am too. It's really a pleasure to be with you. You didn't know it, but I've admired you, Mark, for all you're doing, because it's a great radio ministry.
Well, thank you so much. Before we get into the heart of things here, your bio says that you've been called on twice to provide expert witness testimony for U.S. Senate committees. What is that about?
Well, this isn't my first book. It's actually my third book. I've been a businessman, so I didn't really have time to write books during those years, but. But in my while I was in graduate school, and even before graduate school, I did a research project as an intern in Washington, D.C., and that grew into a study which grew into a book. The book was titled Covert Cadre, and in 1988, when it was published, National Review called it the most important book of the election year. And that book was documented how the Marxist left in America, with a focus on Washington, D.C., had built relationships and bridges, if you will, to the media, and to Congress. And it was, quite surprising in some ways that that Marxists would be given credibility by either the media or our Congress. But that I sort of traced the seeds of what we're living out today.
Yeah, I was just going to say that.
So when the Democrats were putting up various nominees to head agencies like the CIA, they put up Anthony Lake. And I had talked about Anthony Lake's background. You know, he had affiliations with Marxists. People that knew the book knew me, called on me that I would testify to basically tell a story about Anthony Lake that others didn't know. And Anthony Lake chose to withdraw his nomination, I think, when he knew I was going to be testifying.
Well, it's amazing how that background has led you very much, I think, to writing this book. And this is from the prologue, quote, "A hydra-headed war of ideas is being waged by enemies of America to undermine our heritage and divide our people so as to bring an end to life in our constitutional republic as we and generations before us have known it. This book was written to defeat enemies of our republic by equipping readers from every walk of life to get connected to the great accomplishments and the arc of redemption that punctuate and define our history." And this is certainly in line with our own approach here on ISY Radio. People need to remember what is great about America, because you won't fight for something you don't believe in. But Rediscovering America Rediscovering America, your book, has a unique approach. It paints a picture of America through its national holidays. So how did you come about with that idea, to approach it from that angle?
Well, that's really the story of how the book came into being. I have a PhD in political and economic theory, and I was hired by a Hoover Institution and then the Discovery Institute, and I'm still a senior fellow there, to write on political and economic issues. And I was good at writing op-ed pieces, and that's what really they wanted me to do, and that's what I did. I was very prolific, got a lot of things published. What I learned and I always tried to get my articles, which were free market-oriented, conservative-oriented, published in the mainstream. I didn't really want to go published in conservative journals. It's like preaching to the choir. I really wanted to get the views out there in the mainstream. And that was a struggle, because the media really is dominated by by liberal-minded people, and they don't like to give print space to conservative ideas. But in any case, I fought those battles and developed some good relationships with various editors. And what I found was that they also had an appetite for holiday articles. It may have been a struggle to get my work done, but when I proposed a holiday article, they all lit up. They said, "Yeah, we'd love to run that. You know, we don't get many of those, and it's timely. We'll print it we'll publish it either the day of or a few days before the holiday." So I started modestly in writing about one or two holidays a year, and after 4 or 5 years, I had written on every holiday all the national holidays, and I had readers that reached out to me and said, "Look, I've learned so much from your holiday pieces, things about our history that I never knew. You really need to write a book. You need to write a book." So I didn't answer that call, because I'm very busy with many things, and I just, deferred it.
Sure.
And then,
I just think it's so cool, because really, when it comes right down to it, stories and our stories, our national stories, is what really unites us, and the holidays tell our national story for sure. So let's take a break. Coming up, how America has fallen, and then later, how do we get it back? More with Scott Powell, author of the new book, Rediscovering America, after this. Scott Powell is a senior fellow at the Discovery Institute, and he's our guest today to talk about his new book, Rediscovering America, How the National Holidays Tell an Amazing Story About Who We Are. It will be released on March 8th, but you can pre-order it right now. And Scott, real quick, why don't you wrap up? You were talking about how the book came about.
So people encouraged me to write the book. I was too busy to do that, and several years went by. And then after Thanksgiving of 2019, I had a calling. You call it a spiritual calling. You can't really, it's not a voice, but it's a calling. You feel it, you know it. And I decided to answer that call, and it was to write the book. Now, that was Thanksgiving 2019, I had no idea what we were in for. I started writing the book. I put away all other things, dropped all my income-producing work, and began the book in January of 2020, not knowing, of course, that we're in for the COVID so-called pandemic, the lockdowns, the taking away of our constitutional rights, and worse, yes. the attack to property and historic monuments and statues, really the all-out attack on our country, mm-hmm. which manifests itself as a result of the racial issue over George Floyd, of course. But that, I believe, is all, I won't say it, all the details are pre-planned, but that is that was a theme that happened in the Obama years.
Yes, certainly using coordinated. Race,
yeah, using race to create, to attack our cities and of course, part of that agenda was defunding the police. Mm-hmm. I mean, let's mm-hmm. face it, these people have thought out how to take down America. So anyway, the book was written to tell this story, and I had no idea that that's what we're in for, but the book couldn't be more timely.
Yes.
And I wish that it came out a little sooner, but you know, it's all in God's timing. So I trust that it's the right time. that's how the book came about.
Well cool. And we'll be talking about some of those holidays later in the show, but you know, my family on my dad's side, they were here in the early 1700s. We fought in the Revolution. We fought in the War of 1812, the Civil War, World War I, and I think a couple of other engagements in there. I was in grade school when we celebrated the bicentennial in 1976. I grew up loving America and all of her holidays. But, you know, I look around now, and I just don't recognize the America I grew up in and fell in love with, where the FBI considers American-loving patriots to be domestic terrorists, where the FBI are actually calling and threatening moms and dads who show up to school boards to protest the Marxist, racist filth being peddled as education. You know, we've talked with other guests about how we got here, but share your thoughts with our audience on how we got here.
Well, Mark, I think we got here through a long march through the institutions that goes back really to the 1930s. We are in a struggle between good and evil. This mm-hmm, is a mm-hmm. spiritual battle. And the main ideological force that I believe that the evil side is operating through is Marxism.
Yes.
And of course, the Marxist view of revolution and taking down society and creating their Marxist order was the rising of the proletariat against the bourgeoisie, against the capitalists, and there'd be a revolution. Well, that never happened in industrialized societies. Because why? Because in God's order, people get ahead. So the worker may start out at the bottom of society, but if he shows up and works hard, he accumulates a little wealth, a little money, and he realizes, gee, you know, I could do this better. I can start my own company. Mm-hmm. And so, capitalism, a free market system, really fosters progress and upward mobility. So the Marxist analysis, you know, the traditional analysis of a proletariat overthrowing the bourgeoisie never came to pass. But the Marxist ideas never die because its source is evil. And so a Frankfurt school developed in Germany during the 1930s and before. And the Frankfurt school of Marxism was one in which they believed that the way to take down the bourgeois, the capitalist order, would be to infiltrate the culture. And it's called cultural Marxism. And that's what the Frankfurt school developed. When Hitler came to power and they were, you know, threatened, because Hitler had it in for the communists, he wanted total power under his party, the Frankfurt School migrated to the United States. They immigrated, mm-hmm. and they sort of congealed around Columbia University and then spread out from there. But that is sort of the seeds of what happened. So that, I mean, it isn't just the Frankfurt School, but they had a huge influence and they penetrated the teachers' colleges. And there's an old saying about teachers, and I think there's some truth to it, that those who can do and those who can't teach. So the teaching profession is, by its sort of self-selecting nature, somewhat envious of business success. Teachers don't make much money. And so they blame, you know, their position in life, against others. They say, I'm not there because the institutions have you know, haven't allowed it, you know.
It's kind of amazing.
To liberalism and the kissing cousin of liberalism is Marxism.
Yeah.
So
I think teaching tends to attract some people who are not effective, but unfortunately we also see that in politics. But there's an awful lot of good teachers out there, but they really are swallowed up right now by the Marxist ideology that's being pushed so much in our schools. Looking back, it just seems like our founders would not recognize this society and what's happening today, or would they? Because the oppression by our own government right now is pretty close to what the king was doing in the colonies prior to the revolution.
Yes, absolutely. Yep. Well, it really is.
Yeah. So if our founders could see today, do you think they would have done anything differently?
I mean, if the founders were here today, how would they act?
No, I mean, back then, if they could see how America has ended up right now, would they have done anything differently in how they formed it?
No, I think that they did an amazingly masterful job in putting together, I mean, the Declaration started at Declaration of Independence, and then the formalization of those ideas in the Constitution. The only improvement one could have made in the Constitution perhaps would have been one of the important modifications would have been to have put in the Constitution term limits on all the offices.
Oh, yeah. Wouldn't that have been nice? Yeah. Or maybe they could have...
Because it's very, very hard to get it now, even though most people recognize that we should do it. It just won't pass. These people won't term themselves out, so they'll never vote for it.
That's
now,
right.
We could do it through a state's referendum, where you can actually amend the Constitution from the state side.
That might
have
some...
I think Mark Levin was involved in that early on, and I don't know what's happened, but it's a tough road to hoe.
It is, because when you get somebody good in there, you do want them to stay there longer, but unfortunately, we just have too many of the bad ones. Maybe they could have been a little more specific and said, shall not be infringed, really does mean shall not be infringed. And like you're saying, they may not have done anything differently because, as Benjamin Franklin said, it's a republic if you can keep it. And it is up to each generation. All right. How did we get here? How has America fallen so far from our ideals? We'll talk more about that and the influence of Marxist ideology with Scott Powell, author of the book Rediscovering America. That's next. Scott Powell is our guest today. We are talking about Rediscovering America today and how we get back to America as intended. Rediscovering America, How the National Holidays Tell an Amazing Story About Who We Are is coming out March 8th, but you can pre-order it right now so you can get it right off the press. And Scott, we were talking during the press, pre-orders can really help with sales there, can't they?
Oh, yes, absolutely. And I'll tell you how. The first printing of the book is already put to bed, and the book is now ranked number one on Amazon in new releases, and it's going very well. And that's really the goal. It's not to become famous or make money, but to get this message out. So we want to get it to a bestseller status. But the problem now is supply chain constraints are affecting printing.
Hmm.
So print runs are smaller than they have been. So the first edition, I think, may get sold out rather quickly. But we're still in this pre-sale. The pre-sale is the pre-release period, and the publishers look at those numbers. They have a base number that they have for a second edition. But if the pre-sale is really large, it really helps.
Yep.
They will print 5 or 6 books for every pre-sale order.
Isn't that interesting?
So we can get a lot of books in print because I think, the Peter Schweitzer's new book came out January 25th, sold out by February 3.
Wow. I can tell you, having worked in publishing, when you see those pre-sales racking up, it really gets their attention. The publisher will then put more efforts into marketing, and as you say, they'll prioritize your book versus other ones, especially if they're running into supply chain restrictions. So, I thought your discussion on our material success here in America was really interesting. You talk about how a rapid material progress in America was not equaled by a similar and equal rapid progress in spiritual or social progress. What do you attribute that to? Because America was founded in part to pursue freedom, to pursue God. So how do we lose sight of that?
Well, I mean, perhaps we could use the settlement in Boston in 1630 by the Puritans and do a compare and contrast with the Pilgrims who settled about 40 miles south in Plymouth. The Pilgrims came to America for one reason and one reason alone, and that was to live their lives according to the biblical principles that they had. They were not money motivated. They wanted to live out God's, according to God's ways. And they knew that that leads to a life of deep meaning and joy and mm-hmm. so forth. Mm-hmm. And of course, they have to, plant crops and feed themselves and so forth. The Puritans who came 10 years later to Boston also had the same vision. And by the way, both, it was John Winthrop that came, was the leader of the Puritans. And of course, it was William Bradford. Both of these men in their leadership and their speaking spoke in Hebraic terms of that their settlements would be like the Israelites, being free mm-hmm. from bondage of slavery in Egypt, and they would settle in the promised land. They referred their people and cast the vision in the identical terms as the Israelites settling in the promised land, in God's land. And by the way, William Bradford wrote the first 20 pages of his memoirs in Hebrew. In other words, he was well-versed in the Hebraic tradition, though he was a Christian. And indeed, Christianity is, has established on the Jewish foundation. We know mm-hmm. that. Mm-hmm. Now, the Puritans were, they had an entrepreneurial spirit. I mean, they were deep Christians, but they also believed in making a better life materially, and they were very successful. By the second generation, there is no poverty in the Boston, no poverty at all. Everybody was prospering. And some people became wealthy by the third generation. And as societies become wealthier and wealthier, it's very easy for them to think, oh, I did this on my own. I don't really need God as much. So God gets marginalized in their lives, and business gets prioritized. Material things become a priority. Spiritual things take a back seat. It's very common. It's a common pattern. I think it's probably common across cultures and nations. So that's our challenge, is to keep our, to keep our bearings, our spiritual bearings, as we also enjoy material success. And very few people are good at doing that.
Yeah, that's for sure. You talk quite a bit in your opening chapter and prologue there about Marxism and its goal to destabilize individuals and institutions, and how that would bring on mass confusion, demoralization, hopelessness, and the destabilization of society itself, setting the final stage for bringing down what Marxists see as the oppressive order. Do you believe?
Well, if I could take the liberty to answer that very bluntly and directly to your listeners, our enemies, our spiritual enemies, our Marxist enemies, think that they have the ball on the 3-yard line now, and they can get that ball over into the end zone and bring America down.
Oh yeah,
and that's why you're seeing all this radical, crazy activity. I mean, the vote fraud that was perpetrated on this country in 2020. Was brazen. It was out. It was visible. And why would you engage in this? When you look at the craziness of 2020, the tearing down of statues and the destruction of property, in 2020, in dollar terms was greater than any other period in our history except the Civil War period. And were there any prosecutions of the Black Lives Matter people, the Antifa, the elements that did this destruction?
No. And in fact, they went out of their way to not prosecute them. Here in Oregon, of course, they waived all sorts of charges against people and just refused to prosecute them. And that's what you do in third world countries right before they fall. All right, let's take a break a little bit early here. So have lots of questions here. For Scott Powell, he is the author of the new book, Rediscovering America, How the National Holidays Tell an Amazing Story About Who We Are. Stay with us. Welcome back. We're talking to Scott Powell, who's the author of Rediscovering America, How the National Holidays Tell an Amazing Story About Who We Are. He's a former fellow at the Hoover Institute and a current senior fellow at the Discovery Institute. And Scott, in that last segment there, I hated to interrupt you, but you were talking about how Marxists really believe that they've got the ball on the 3-yard line, and now it's just a matter of pushing it over. And I absolutely believe that. I think the whole COVID nonsense and the election fraud, as you mentioned, really, they've dropped the last veil. Marxists,
yes, they have.
They are mm-hmm. just totally out in the open now, and I think it, finally people are starting to wake up. So do you believe that Biden, or more likely his minions under him, who I think are the real people in charge, do you think Biden is part of this and actively working to quite literally destroy America? Because if you were trying to blow up America, I honestly don't know what you'd be doing differently than what we're seeing right now.
I fully agree with that. I fully agree. So why was Biden chosen? We know that there is a deep state. We know that political candidates are, in a way, chosen. Why was Biden chosen? He was chosen because they thought they could present him as a moderate, a unifier. You know, they had painted Donald Trump as a divider. And so Biden was their choice to win, because they cannot win on ideas and policies. But they thought that Biden, with a so-called moderate background, I would argue that it wasn't that moderate, but in any case, they presented him, but they really didn't present him, did they? And the reason you can be sure that there was vote fraud is that here's Biden hiding out in his bunker, unable to gather more than two or three dozen people at any public event that he's at, right? A rally, yeah. You know, by,
yeah.
Biden.
The
meanwhile,
narrative.
You have Donald Trump here, with rallies that had 45,000 people, standing room only, cars backed up. I mean, there is no way that Joe Biden could defeat Donald Trump.
Yeah.
Just no way.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Vote fraud, and we all remember the evening of the vote counting, how they all, you know, multiple states all stopped counting at the same time. Trump was way ahead in all those states, significantly ahead in Pennsylvania. I think he was up by 350 or 400,000 votes. And then we wake up in the morning, and the next day,
magic.
And what do we see? Everything's flipped.
Yeah.
I mean, there it is, right in front of you. Vote fraud.
Yeah, I remember watching the results here in Pennsylvania, and I was up late at night, and he's up by 700,000. And I'm thinking, there's just no way that Biden could overcome that. Just no way. And
right.
But I think they needed Biden. They needed somebody as the mask, because that's what the left does, is they never tell you exactly what they're about. As you say in your book, the left has a gift for packaging and naming their agenda in appealing ways. And I read that and I thought, yeah, so did Satan.
Yes, absolutely. It's not about, you know, it's actually not about direct deception. It's about a direct lie. It is a clever deception, a ploy, if you will, making something sound good. Oh, well, you know, if you eat of the apple, you know, you will know good and evil like God. That's a, you know, wow. Yeah. Well, that's very appealing. And that's how the devil works. That's how typically the Marxists work. And it's been very effective in the Cultural Revolution, because, I mean, that's what enabled them to succeed in taking over almost all of our cultural institutions. And really the political realm is the last realm. And they think it's on the 3-yard line.
Yep.
So,
you know, in your book, you talk about why the genius and simplicity of the Constitution, with its checks and balances and protections under the Bill of Rights, are the only reliable guarantor of people's creativity and the flourishing of the nation. And I agree with that, but why aren't they working right now? We've got executive orders now have the same effect and power as legislation. Effectively, we no longer have a president. We have an elected king. How did we go from throwing out a king by birth to a king by election?
That's a long story, but essentially, if we were to cut to the chase, the march through the institutions and the political institutions now, they've been under, you know, they've been working within the political institutions for 3-4 decades, really, to put people in place. And that includes the judicial appointments and so mm-hmm. forth. And then you have people like George Soros with billions of dollars able to fund and buy attorney general's positions and
right,
key,
right.
You know, key judicial areas. So that's one reason there were no prosecutions from, you know, the craziness of 2020, is that in many cases, those people wouldn't, they couldn't make a case before, you know, an unbiased court. But, we, you know, all of this can be reversed, but it takes the people to really take responsibility. I mean, we are a country of the people, by the people, for the people. So it really comes with the people. We We like the idea of a white knight. Donald Trump sort of represented that. But we, the people, have got to get involved at every level of our society.
Right. And I really think that's why the left has so exposed themselves, is because they realized that Donald Trump getting gaining more power, more popularity, that was going to expose them for what they were doing. And he probably would have started exposing them. The point of checks and balances built into America was because of tyranny, because our founders knew the nature of man. But those also stem, I think, from our belief in God. Our rights recognize that there is a God, that we have God-given rights, not from man. Our checks and balances, I think, recognize that there is evil, and that comes from
absolutely.
Man. So are we at where we're at because not only have we gotten God out of society, but because we don't recognize that, yes, there is, in fact, evil in this world?
Mark, you're so right. This is, you've made just the key point of this whole broadcast, and that is that we have to face the fact that there is evil in human nature, and it can be mitigated. It's largely mitigated by being in the Word, reading about the truth, connecting with God through our prayer life and so forth, hanging around with people of like-minded beliefs. It's self-supporting, it's self-reinforcing. It's very important. But the fact is that when people pursue money and they pursue political power, that's where their fallen nature can really be, can come out. Mm-hmm. The pursuit of money and power is a corrupting force. And so that's what we're seeing, really, is people in power are corrupted.
Yes.
We have corruption at every level in our government now. And in our agencies, we've allowed the creation of an administrative state, an unelected administrative state, which can decide, can make or break companies, can decide mm-hmm. how land is used.
Mm-hmm.
It can make all kinds of decisions, and these decisions are made by people not elected.
Yes.
This is actually rather frightening.
Yeah, I think we not only need term limits for elected officials, I think we need to somehow come up with term limits for bureaucrats as well. All right, coming up, fixing all of this, how do we get back to where we were? Stay with us. More with Scott Powell and his great book, Rediscovering America. And welcome back. We're talking to Scott Powell. He's the author of Rediscovering America, How the National Holidays Tell an Amazing Story About Who We Are. He is a former fellow at the Hoover Institute and a current senior fellow at the Discovery Institute. And that book, I should mention, is coming out March 8th, but you can order it now, get the pre-order, and that will actually boost sales because then the publisher will pay attention to that and they'll order more of those books and beef up their marketing efforts. Scott, I like what you say in your book, that true leadership, law enforcement, and responsive institutions will need to work now to bring about correctives to problems just as they have throughout America's 400 years of history. So let's start talking about getting back on the right path. And in that last segment, we talked about God and the importance of spirituality and facing up to the fact that there is, in fact, evil. Will we not rediscover America until we rediscover God?
That is absolutely true. That's a true statement you just made. You know, God was really, in many ways, the founder of America through people. And that's how God works. He works through people. He gave mm-hmm. us redemption from our sin through Jesus Christ, who became man and died for us as a man. Went through that pain that we might be forgiven. So God works through people. And if Americans need to understand that America just didn't get formed out of, because it was just this chance of history. The roots of America are all in the Protestant Reformation, where there was a priesthood of all, the Protestant Reformation resulted in a critique of the corruption in the Catholic Church and an assertion of biblical principles that all people can have a relationship with God. It's called the priesthood of all believers. You don't need a mediating institution like the Catholic Church to have a relationship with God. Big emphasis on, on freedom of conscience, that people are free to believe. And so God's ways don't include forcing people to believe in the Bible or in Christianity. People are free to choose. And there's a recognition that some people will choose and some may not, but we hope that the people who choose become the leaders of society because they'll make good choices. So the roots of America were all there in the Reformation. We're the first nation in human history that came out of the first modern society. You know, there were in the history of mankind a few nation states of cultural achievement, of virtue and efflorescence. What comes to mind is Athens under Pericles in Greece, Venice under the Medicis, Great Britain under Elizabeth, and the time of Shakespeare. These were very virtuous societies, but none of those city-states and nations were founded as America was. America is the only nation in human history founded on ideas and principles that come out of the Bible. That's very powerful. And we prospered because those principles were applied early on. And they were applied, as you've touched on, by creating a government that limited power, limited the fallen nature that would become government. And there were many levels of that checks and balances, not just the three branches, but the state and the federal competition of power, would mitigate abuse of power. So America rose to its current stature. And I would say our best stature is 50 years ago or so. But we became a superpower in less than 200 years, economic superpower, number one power in the world. Why? Because the government did not interfere too much.
That's right.
with people's lives. They could go about being creative, creating new things, building businesses, following their calling.
Yeah, you had the freedom to pursue what you believed would make you prosperous, and in doing so, you made everybody around you prosperous. And you talk about the founding of America, and the left so wants to focus on the origins of America, you know, to destroy that holy narrative, really. And they rail at the founding fathers' flaws rather than celebrate their virtues. They shriek about slavery and therefore use those attacks as saying America isn't legitimate and so on. Why do we not fight back and expose the founders of Marxism? I mean, these were loathsome men, complete racists, full of hate and contempt for their fellow man, that if thousands or millions of them must die to put it in the New World Order, then all the better, more for the rest of us. So why are we not on the offense here? Where are the films about Karl Marx and Hegel and Lenin and all the rest? Why no exposure of the left's origins?
Well, it does exist, but remember, since the cultural institutions, Hollywood has been taken over by the left. They want to cover all this up. They want to prevent the public from ever learning about this. I mean, we now have lost our First Amendment. We've lost probably seven other of those first 10 amendments as well. Think of those people in jail in Washington, D.C.
Just horrid.
And they have no charges against them. They have no opportunity for bail bond. This is totally unconstitutional.
Yeah. I certainly hope, you know, you're right, the left really dominates Hollywood. But there are some Hollywood studios. In fact, we've talked to a local filmmaker ourselves. I really hope that we will start seeing these kinds of films out there that expose the left for who they are. I used to love those patriotic films back in the 60s and 70s that we used to have. And it just seems so rare to see any of those anymore. You've got Trump's new media group that he's forming. I am really hoping for a lot of good news out of that. And that is one of their focuses that they say that they're going to be doing is some actual family-friendly Hollywood-level productions.
Well, since you mentioned that, I was just meeting last night with the founder and CEO of an animation studio in Hollywood, and I got connected to him through somebody else. And lo and behold, there's a conservative animation studio in Hollywood, but they never talk politics. But he read the whole manuscript. He says, "I've got to make a movie out of your book, Scott."
Because that's awesome.
The characters are so wonderful to create an animation. They're such fascinating people with circumstances that just lend themselves to a very successful movie. We'll have to see. But I think that'll go forward as the book is successful. So let's focus on the book first, and the movie can come later.
That's right. In fact, the success of the book will help drive that for sure.
Sure.
Okay,
sure.
Let's go ahead and take a break. The book, Rediscovering America, is about doing that through looking at our national holidays and how they tell an amazing story about who we are. We'll give you a tease of one of those up next. Thank you. And welcome back. In our final segment now with Scott Powell. He's the author of Rediscovering America, How the National Holidays Tell an Amazing Story About Who We Are, that is coming out on March 8th, but you can order that right now, and that will actually help boost the sales there as the publisher takes notice of those. And Scott, we want to, in this last segment, talk about some of these holidays, and we'll look at President's Day in a moment, I think, since that's coming up soon. But do you have a particular favorite holiday?
Oh, that's a tough one. It really is. I have to say that Christmas and Easter are my favorite holidays, and they are, you know, they're in the book, and there are great stories there. Mm-hmm. But President's Day, you know, with the shock and awakening of Americans that the freedoms, rights, and opportunities that they'd taken for granted for generations have been brazenly stripped away in the last couple of years, this President's Day, that's 2022, I think can be one of our most significant holidays. It's unique among American holidays in providing the opportunity to remember and appreciate why George Washington and Abraham Lincoln, whose birthdays, of course, we're celebrating in February, were the two greatest presidents. And let me tell you more. The Rediscovering America, the chapter there on President's Day, points out that Washington and Lincoln both agreed that should America fall or fail, it would not come from foreign invasion, but rather from within.
Yes.
In Washington's words, if America would fail, it would come from three things. One, institutions failing to keep people well informed. Two, division resulting from party faction and hyper-partisanship. And three, the moral and religious decline of society. If that doesn't describe where we are, I don't know what does. And that was all, you know, the providential, the prescience of George Washington. Now, Lincoln, who came some 70 years later, his observations were different, but he observed that corporations have been enthroned and an era of corruption in high places will follow, and the money power of the country will endeavor to prolong its reign, and I'm quoting him, its reign by working upon the prejudice of the people until all wealth is aggregated in a few hands and the republic is destroyed. You know, it's amazing. You know, while he couldn't possibly have foreseen the technological transformation to come in the U.S. economy, Lincoln was still incredibly prescient. It's now obvious that the aggregation and concentration of wealth in the information technology industry today is undermining our constitutional First Amendment rights. That's very clear, but all the other rights too. You know, free speech is, after all, the cornerstone of the republic. You know, I think you probably heard Ben Franklin's warning to future generations that, quote, there is no such thing as public liberty without freedom of speech. Hmm. So both Washington and Lincoln were amazing in foreseeing the difficulties that we would face. And now we're on the 3-yard line.
Yeah. Yeah. One of the things
that our enemies on the 3-yard line, we have three yards to push back or to do a reversal. Let's hope for that reversal. Huh? Let's hope.
A fumble recovery would be great right now. Yeah, I honestly believe that we are headed that way. I think people are starting to wake up to what's happening. I think people are done with the censorship. This last quarter, Facebook lost users for the first time ever in its history. And I think people are just done with the censorship. Getting back to Washington and Lincoln, one of the things that you'll hear the left say is that, oh, well, you know, like Washington in particular, he wasn't really a believer in God. He was a Mason. And so when he's saying God, he doesn't really mean God. And you'll hear similar attacks to Lincoln that, well, he's just kind of saying those things, but he didn't really believe it because, you know, just, and they will give you a list of things. But these two men, God was very much a part of their lives.
Oh, in a very profound way. I mean, we know so much about Washington because of the written record. You know, there are over 100 prayers that Washington wrote on paper. He wrote prayers. How many people write their prayers? Mm. Washington did. He wrote prayers actually for every day of the week, a morning prayer and an evening prayer. Mm. So for people to say he wasn't a praying man, or that, you know, the prayer in Valley Forge was didn't really happen, it's absolute nonsense. All you have to do is read the writings of Washington.
Yeah.
Lincoln's faith was very different.
Yeah, I was going to say with Lincoln, he actually, I think he was a believer in God, obviously, before he got into the presidency. But the trials of the Civil War, I think, really moved him to a much deeper relationship with God.
Oh, you couldn't be more right about that, Mark. I mean, he was on his knees because the first 2 years of the war, and he thought, you know, the Union side was the right side. Mm-hmm. But he also recognized that the Southerners, who were perhaps even more Christian than the Northerners, they prayed to the same God.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So he's struggling. How can this be? We're both praying to the same God. It's got to be in God's hands. The solution to this war has to be in God's hand. And at one point, he had an epiphany in his prayer that he needed to align his cause with the abolition of slavery. Because as you remember, the war started over secession.
Mm-hmm.
And slavery was not, Lincoln himself said in his first inaugural address that he would not, you know, that slavery was not an issue. He looked to the states to solve that problem. But of course, they didn't, you know, they hadn't solved the problem, and secession led to the war. And the war was over that. It was to keep the Union together. But when Lincoln was led through his desperation in prayer life, that my son, you've got to make slavery the issue. That you know that that's immoral,
yeah.
And you've got to proclaim it to the nation.
That's
he
right.
did that.
Yeah.
Finally,
that was
in the Emancipation Proclamation. And what happened? The war turned. The war turned.
Refocused people. Yeah, got them in the right direction, and that recognition of the true cancer that was there in America at that time, I think is what certainly galvanized and
but there
won,
are various
that,
miracles
so,
in that war too that are in the book.
Oh, absolutely, so, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
Unfortunately, we're up against the clock. Scott Powell, his book one more time is Rediscovering America. You can order that right now, even though it's coming out on March 8th. Scott, I thank you so much for your time, and we're going to have you back for Easter.
Wonderful. I look forward to it.
That is all of our time for today. We certainly hope that you're at least a little wiser for having been here. America is worth fighting for. America is worth fighting for. The enemy isn't at the gate anymore. They're already inside the gates and running many of our institutions and government agencies. Did you ever think that you would see a time that patriots who love America are the enemy? We cannot give up. We will not surrender because America is worth fighting for. But as we say every week, the best information does you no good if you don't use it. Reagan, what do you think?
I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The I Spy Radio Show.